Welcome to another episode of the Blue Crew and New York Rangers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus, joined by my good friends, Avery Zaretsky, and replacing Cody Frankel today, who's off doing rich guy shit in the Hamptons for Memorial Day weekend, is our pal and recurring guest, friend of the show, Michael Delzato, former New York Ranger. DZ, you've been in town for a couple games. You're back in Miami now. You won't be at the games 3 and 4 against the Panthers, but you've been around the team a lot lately. Well, let's not get into hockey right away. This guy's horny.
How was your Euro trip, bro?
Yeah, what's going on? Euro trip was good. Did London for 5 nights. The highlights there were probably I went to a soccer game, went to Aston Villa, Liverpool game. I'm a huge soccer fan. And I ended up sitting beside and watch a whole game with Tom Hanks, which was pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't mention really that cool. When I talked to you on the phone?
Yeah, I know. It's just not something you throw out. I didn't want to sound like I didn't want to get called out.
That is something you throw out there.
Yeah. So watch a game with him, and he's been to numerous Rangers game before. So we talked hockey for a large portion of the game, and like what a genuine human being. You have someone who's a international movie star. He was so soft spoken and so kind. So that was really cool. That was in like Birmingham, so just outside London, and you got like a bit of a smaller city feel. So just how passionate the fans were, it was, you know, really, really cool to see. Went from there to Oslo for their version of July 4th, Independence Day, which was unique because you think of, you know, July 4th, everyone wears like their wife beaters and their jorts and you pound Budweiser and you get super fucked up. And there they're like drinking rosé and like they're so much classier about it. They all dress up and like the guys are in suits and the women are in like these, they're called bunads. So very different celebration, but a very cool experience. Finished off in Amsterdam, then came back to New York and got there in time for game one. So nice little stretch of May for me.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, I thought you were at Oktoberfest. I wouldn't compare it to July 4th. I don't know. I mean, I've never been, but that's what it looks like to me.
It looks like in the way they dress up. Yeah, but yeah. The whole downtown of Oslo is like hundreds of thousands of people, like no cars on the street. Everyone's just walking the streets, going to like their specific parties. And the one we went to was by the castle downtown. And it's, you know, again, everyone drinking rosé, all dressed up. And there's, you know, house music that's blaring. And it was cool. Really cool experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd go back and I'd recommend you guys go.
Yeah, I would definitely love to do that. But let's get into some Ranger talk. I know you were at game one. Did you tune into game two closely or was it kind of, you know, what were you up to last night?
Yeah, I'm watching every game now. Definitely watching every game. Game one was bad, and I don't know what it was. I don't know. You could kind of feel the tension in the crowd. Everyone was a little nervous. They were kind of feeling each other out, but Florida came out hot with, they were smothered them all over the ice. It felt like the crowd was waiting for something to happen for them to cheer, but there wasn't even really a hit. There wasn't even really a big play, a scrum. There was nothing that got them going. And I don't blame one or the other. I think the crowd definitely needs to get them going as well. Early on getting the, you know, a let's go Rangers chant or getting some type of energy to that the players can feed off of, and then vice versa. And you saw it last game, right? Game two with that early goal, then the scrum rode away and then everyone was going nuts. Right. And that's what you want. You want to get the crowd into it early, as opposed to waiting till for a big moment in the third period before they start to get loud and get rowdy.
I feel like you would know it best because it's definitely nerve wracking. It's gotta be nerve wracking as a player because you want to get the crowd going, but you're always trying to find ways to get it done. And they finally get it done really early. And that was just, it was nice to see because there really wasn't a moment in game one where they could just get the crowd going. And they were probably, I mean, their backs are against the wall there.
Yeah. They were on their heels the whole, you know, that I want to say most of the game, you know, they felt like they get out of their zone. They weren't able to make clean breakouts. They got out of their zone and now they're changing. They're just trying to get fresh legs on the ice. They were just, you know, tired legs every shift. They were just struggling to get off as opposed to creating some momentum and changing with fresh legs in the offensive zone, allowing to, you know, turn shift over after shift. And it was, I was a bit shocked, to be honest with you. I was expecting that the crowd and the building to be fucking buzzing game one.
Yeah.
And it was just,
it was in the beginning. It was.
Until Florida took it to them. No, it wasn't. It didn't last very long. Right. I was expecting the whole first period, the place to be nuts and having that, the aura about the building kind of take over. And it just felt like, everyone felt tense. That's how it felt to me. Like I was in the crowd watching. I was like, oh God, like I even felt a little bit nervous for everyone else. Everyone was like not really sure how to act is at least how I felt.
Yeah. I mean, even with that too, though, I thought in game one, and this could be, you know, maybe I'm off here. Balakett hasn't posted his like post game charts that he does. And like, he's one where I love like the analytic charts that he posts. It's just so clean and easy to read and understand. But I thought the Rangers had more high quality chances in game one than they did last night, but their sustained pressure last night was the difference, you know? And I think most people would look at game one and be like, ah, they didn't have much going, but like you still get two breakaways, a couple 2-on-1s, some odd man rushes. Like last night, they didn't have any of that, but the energy was there. So it's like these two different games. And that's why hockey's such a funny sport. Like sometimes, you know, things don't really go your way when you're playing better, but when you're playing poorly, you can get a bounce, you know, here or there every now and then. But they didn't get the luck in game one. You know, they could easily be up 2-0 in the series had something different happened, you know, on one of those chances in game one.
That's why, as much as the analytics tell a certain part of the game,
yeah,
they don't tell the other part, right? So for people who have the eye test and understand hockey, they would watch that game and think completely differently than what the analytics are telling them. So you raise a really good point. Game one, if Schneider scores that breakaway, maybe we're talking about a different result or a different outcome afterwards. Maybe there is some momentum. Maybe the crowd gets into it and where it's a completely different feeling in the crowd. Or if Cooley scores that breakaway, yeah, they had better chances. But last night, exactly like you said, the sustained ozone pressure, some of the scrums. And I know everyone loves having Rempe in the lineup. And it's, you know, a very interesting topic. But he does bring – the crowd loves him. Anytime he takes a face-off, the crowd goes absolutely
berserk. But not everyone loves it, DZ. It's become a very, like, it's almost like political at this point.
I agreed. And I'm not one, hey, if you can only put a guy in for 5-6 minutes and that's all the coach is able to trust you for, yeah, you probably have to go with someone who's going to give you 10 to 12 in playoffs, because God forbid there's an injury and you need someone to slot up the lineup. You need someone who can fill that role. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think for last game, you needed that energy. You needed someone who's going to provide that for you. Again, if that guy takes a face off and they start chanting his name, like it's nuts. But that's what they needed. That's what they needed to get a little bit of momentum back in the series.
And I wanted to kind of, Avery, I don't mean to jump
over
you, but I wanted to ask you, I kind of want to put you both on the spot. Who do you think was Florida's maybe not best player, but most energetic player last night?
They kept talking about Forsling. I thought he was so
good. He was great. He was great. Not the guy I'm thinking of.
Ray Ferraro made a statement. It felt like he was on the ice the entire period at one point, and it really did. Like he's such a horse, that guy. He's a serious problem for the Rangers. But I would probably say him as like an underrated big player for them.
He skates so well. He covers so much of the ice. He's incredible at cutting off angles in the neutral zone. You'll never see, not shouldn't say never, you'll rarely see a zone entry against him. He's so good at his angles and forcing dump-ins, and he's usually first back on the puck. For Florida, that Lombards provide amazing energy, okay. You know, and he doesn't play, even during the season, he doesn't play a whole lot. And I know him a little bit, and I watch him, like he always provides good energy. He finishes checks. He makes the right plays. He's in on the forecheck. He's getting shots on net. He's doing all of the little things. And that's a guy that you continue to build off that shift after shift. So he impressed me. And I don't know what his minutes were last night. I didn't check. But every time he was on the ice, I was like, shit, this guy's like, he's producing. It may not be a goal, but he's providing positive momentum for his team.
Okay. So you led me into exactly what the point I wanted to make was. Ryan Lomberg last night had 4 hits, 5 shots on goal. And in my opinion, was Florida's best forward on the ice all night. I know Barkov had a couple plays here and there. Reinhardt had a couple chances. But Lomberg, every time he was out there, he was noticeable. He played 10 minutes and 29 seconds of ice time last night. Matt Rempe had 10 minutes and 3 seconds of ice last night. So you can be fucking effective with a little amount of ice time. And I think, you know, we're getting lost in that with talk. The conversation about Rempe is like, how can a guy who plays 4 to 7 minutes be impactful? Like, there's ways to do it. And I thought last night, whether you agree or disagree, this is just my opinion, I thought that was Rempe's most effective game that I've seen him play.
And you go back to the Washington series, you never want to see anyone get hurt, right?
Yeah.
But he comes in, he lays that big hit on Van Riemsdyk, puts him out. Like now you change the series. You have 5D playing the rest of the game. You got guys playing extra minutes that shouldn't be, you know, playing in situations that they aren't used to or shouldn't be in. Their minutes have increased. Now that takes a completely different toll on physically, mentally, emotionally, on so many different aspects of the game. So again, you don't want to see anyone get hurt, but one shift, one big hit could change the momentum of a series.
Yeah, yeah. We talk about how good Forsling's been, right? You get Rempe's line coming out there. He lays a big hit, and it counteracts to Goodrow laying a big hit and the rest of the line making a big hit. And I do want to talk about it for a second because a lot of people were talking about the Lomberg hit on Beasley. It was fine. If you watch the actual full clip, he did have the puck for like a second. And like, that's what you want out of a guy like Lomberg. Like if Matt Rempe does that, we love that. So I think that we could lay off of that. Like, that's just not.
Was there a lot of discourse on that? I didn't really see.
Yeah, there was online. There for sure was. Yeah.
This may be an unpopular. Even the Kulikov hit in the first, like, I don't know, 5 years ago or when I started, that like that guy would have been, you know, patted on the back. Everyone said like, what an incredible. Really? It was a little bit late. This is the part I don't. This is the part I don't. That bugs me about the head checks, and I want play. I'm big on player safety. I'm completely on the side of player safety, but. You're going into a check, his shoulder and his everything stays down. Yeah, he hits his head, but like it's impossible not to. He got his full body, and it was definitely a late hit. I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah,
it was late, but that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that's not called. Like that's applauded for a great hit.
It's, really?
You're coming through the middle of the ice. You receive a pass, a breakout pass through the middle of the ice. You better expect that you're going to get someone's coming after you. The problem now is. The game has gotten so fast and so much skill. Yeah. We're protecting the players so much that they're not protecting themselves. Yeah. And this may not be the best example. And that's what I'm saying. It may not be the most popular take, but just in general, there has to be some onus on the players to protect themselves and put themselves in better positions to receive a hit.
Yeah. It's for sure a buddy pass. And I think all the mechanics were right on the hit. Like you were saying, like kept the shoulder down, this and that. It was just the timing was off.
Yeah. Agreed. But once you're as a defenseman, you go in on a play like that and you're committed to make that hit, you have to follow through. Cause if you back off, that puck now goes past you, you're moving north while the play is coming south. That guy's jumping by you. It's probably an odd man rush. So you're committed at that point and there's no way to back out.
I try not to be biased. I mean, maybe you guys probably had it different on the broadcast. When I first saw it, from the press box, I was like, holy fuck, that's got to be. Like, if that's not a five, like, that's what I was thinking at the time, right? If that's not a five, like, what is? Because, dude, it looked bad. It looked bad in the arena. It really did.
It's late, but his shoulder's down.
Yeah.
His elbow does not come up. Yeah, his head, his head is hit, but yeah. His whole body is. It's impossible not to hit the head. He's a bigger guy, too. His head is down. It was a full body check. Yeah, and cool. He's a man. That's a big boy
Too,
right?
The fuck out of Rempe later in the game too.
You look at some of Rempe's hits, right? His mechanics are all correct. He's just taller than most of the other guys, so he's gonna make head contact. That's just the way it is. But it's like I completely agree with DZ. It's like you want to protect the players 100%, and I do think it was late, right? Like it was a buddy pass, and he just timed it wrong. But there's also a sense of like, this is hockey. Like guys got to lay hits. And I 100% agree.
Yeah. DZ, something that I wanted to, you know, kind of rewind back to, I guess. Let's talk about prior to game two, when you're unsure what the lineup might be. Blake Wheeler's out there in warm up, you know, Matt Rempe's out there in warm up. Kaapo Kakko's not. And, you know, I don't know how closely you watch Kaapo Kakko. We've talked about him a lot on this show. And listen, I think a lot of Ranger fans have been very hard on Gerard Gallant the past 2 years and how he handled this team and how he coached this team. In game six of the 2022 conference final, the guy who gets scratched in the biggest game of the year is Kaapo Kakko. Come game two of the Eastern Conference final, you can say it was the biggest game of the year to this point. The guy who gets scratched, Kaapo Kakko. At what point do you look at this player and now say, there's a theme here about this guy that when it comes down to it, he's the one who's coming out of the lineup. And listen, Roslovic could have easily been scratched last night over Kakko. Yeah. You know, there's arguments to be made. But is there anything you see specifically about Kakko that, like, he's the fall guy? Because it's, you know, there's so many different – I'm rambling here, but, like, he's such a hard player to figure out, right? Like, yeah, when he's confident, he's such a different player. And when he's not, it's just, you can't really tell, right? So yeah. What do you think?
His confidence definitely can't be at an all-time high right now, but that's not something you worry about. You're just worried about winning the game. And as a coach, you're putting the best lineup on the ice to win that game. You can't worry about, unfortunately, you can't worry about feelings or personalities or whatnot. This isn't the time for it. With him, I think it's similar to the Laf situation. We spoke about at the start of the year. Everyone was wondering, okay, when is he going to break out? When is he going to break out? Laf, now you have him on the first line. You're playing with quality players. He's getting more offensive looks, and look at the year he had.
Yeah.
Kako hasn't really been put in the best position to succeed, but where do you put him?
He played with Kreider and Mika for quite a bit.
Yeah, fair. Maybe the leash is maybe a little bit shorter. And this is, as we talked about before, this is the good and the bad when you're playing on an original six team and a team like the New York Rangers, when you're expected to win every single year. Your leash is short. You're going to get an opportunity, but what do you do with that opportunity? If you don't make the most of it, well, we're paying guys $6-8 million for that opportunity. So now they're going to get that back. And these are veteran guys that have a proven track record that are going to take a hold of that opportunity and make the most of it. So it's an unfortunate situation to be in. But at what point, if he's the fall guy, at what point is it, are we talking, hey, is it time to cut our losses, right? Like, does he deserve another opportunity elsewhere where he can have a little bit of a longer leash and flourish and be the player everyone expect him to be? Or do you stick with him and maybe next year he gets another opportunity? I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. It's an unfortunate situation for him to be in because there is a lot of room for him to grow. But when you're playing on a team like the Rangers, the pressure is very high. The stakes are very high at all times. It's a tough situation to be in. And I feel for him. I've been there. I feel for him. It's not easy.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, Avery, you want to say something about it, Avery? Because I know Avery's our Kako guy on the show. So
I love Kaapo Kakko. I love what he brings in terms of what he's built into himself as a player, right? Like he's a two-way forward now, defensive style, and that line has shut down teams throughout this playoffs. But at this point, we're in the Eastern Conference Final. I trust Peter Laviolette. He knows this team better than us. He knows what happens inside the locker room, outside the locker room. And at this point, you just got to trust the lineup, trust what he puts out there. He's going to put out the best team, like you said. And it proved dividends last night. The Rangers got it done. And I feel like we just haven't done enough justice for Barkley Goodrow right now. A guy who just gets pestered all year by the fans. The analytic crowd hates him. And he gets a penalty, right? Which is clearly not a penalty. Barkov slips. And it's the whole storyboard of the Team of Destiny documentary style. Like, this is the stuff that goes in the fucking Stanley Cup video. He gets a penalty and the puck doesn't lie. He scores the game winner in overtime when it felt like the Rangers needed a hero. And who else could it have been but Barkley Goodrow? It was incredible. Last night was just insane.
Those are the guys that win you the series. And your best players have to be your best players for sure, but like the depth scoring, and it's the guys that do the gritty work, do like the shit that no one else wants to do, are typically the ones that score the biggest goals, right? Like it's not Brad that's coming in scoring the biggest goals come playoffs. It's some of the other guys. And for a guy like that, I love seeing that, because they're exactly like you said, these are guys that get shit on all year. Oh, he didn't do this, he didn't do that. It's like, how about these big block shots, taking a hit, making a hit, like doing like the hard work. So I love when those guys get rewarded, and now everyone's like, oh, what a fucking game, what a fucking game. Like, what were you saying about it before? You know? That was an incredible shot. You know, if you watch a replay in slow-mo, like incredible, incredible shot. Puck was on its end too. I was really happy for him.
Vinny put a little too much sauce on that one, but can't give a good player a bad pass, right? That's what they say.
As they say.
But just diving a little more deep into it, you look at both teams' blue lines, and listen, I don't want to make this whole thing about Rempe, but I think you have to kind of talk about it. You do. I think at this point it is undeniable, right? I think you talk about a team's identity. They are one team with him in the lineup, one team without him in the lineup. And, I think it's evident, right? But I just want to talk specifically about being a defenseman. And, something that is noticeable right now on the Ranger side is that Florida, any chance they have to finish a hit on Adam Fox, they're doing it. And you know, while it might not, you know, there's some fans who are like, they're targeting the Rangers hurt players. They're hitting Hedl. They're hitting Fox. Like, you want to wear guys down, especially a number one D. Like, DZ, when you were playing playoff hockey for the Rangers, like, you were the guy. So, like,
yeah,
did you feel, you know, I guess in series against Ottawa, you know, at 2012 run, like, who was it, Chris Neal, I guess, on the other side? Like, yeah, did you feel he was coming at you every time he had a chance when you were going back on pucks? Like,
but he was coming at everyone. Yeah, he was coming at everyone. That's that when it gets to playoff hockey, and this is where it gets a little different, everyone finishes their checks, right? Yeah. The good teams, everyone.
Not Jack guys,
I know. He's a buddy of mine. I already gave him shit about that.
Is he?
Don't worry. I've told him. But everyone finishes checks. So, like, so in the season, when you go back for a puck, you may have – you look over your shoulder and whoever it is on the other team, their number one center is coming down on you. You're like, hey, if I look this way, he's probably going to turn off trying to pick off a pass. He's not going to finish me. So that gives you whatever, a half second or one stick length more to make a play. Now you don't have that. So now you're seeing Adam Fox, you're seeing, you know, even look at Trouba, like a lot of defensive turnovers below the goal line, breakout passes where guys think they have a little extra time and they don't. And that's what's hurting them a little bit. And with Fox, he's clearly dealing with something.
Yeah.
But as a player of his skill and caliber, come playoff time, not being the biggest guy, it's a little bit more evident. It's a tougher game out there, and it can't be easy for him. And especially when you're not at 100%, but at the same time, who is at 100% right now? Probably no one. So I feel for him, but you see some of the other plays. He gets in the offensive zone. He has his head up, and some of the seam passes that the play made on the goal. He makes some very, very savvy plays, but in his own end, yeah, it's been a little bit of a struggle right now. That's playoff hockey, though. You're going to get hit every time you touch a puck, and he should be targeted. If I'm Paul Maurice, I'm telling every player on that team, Adam Fox has the puck, you finish that check. I don't want to see anyone turning off on him. And if this series goes to where we think it's going to be 6 or 7 games, by game 4 or 5, and even 3 as a defenseman, and you're getting hit every time you go back to touch a puck, there's going to be numerous instances where you're like, you know what, I'm not going in first anymore. And that's just natural. That's just human instinct, right? It's not enjoyable to get hit against the glass every single time you touch a puck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every check matters. It's so important. Like, they just add up, and in a long series, the guys are going to get worn down. It's inevitable. So I think that you got to finish your checks no matter who you're going up against. And I agree. If Paul Maurice sees Adam Fox laboring something, he's going to tell his guys to go get him. It's just part of the game.
Before we do go into fan questions, there was one more thing I kind of wanted to bring up, just like in relation to what we talked about with Kako. You know, Paul Maurice had kind of talked about it, just about the way their team is built. And, you know, guys like Kako, guys like Roslovic, honestly, and a guy who I really want to make the point of for Florida is Carter Verhaeghe. Like, DZ, you probably know as good as anyone, the NHL, it's a constant cycle, right? Guys are drafted, and when they're drafted to good teams, sometimes, like, you know, there's a guy who's drafted to be a top six player that doesn't necessarily fit into that top six, and then all of a sudden their role within a team, the way they see themselves, their own identity, it can shift. Like, Carter Verhaeghe, pretty sure he was drafted by the Islanders and then, like, even went to Toronto, didn't fit there, then goes to Tampa, like, on a cup team, doesn't really get a lot of ice time there. And now you see him as a 28-year-old in Florida becoming a 30-40 goal scorer, and it's all starting to click. Like, there could be some of those guys that, you know, Maurice was saying, like, our team is made up of guys who didn't fit somewhere else, and we had a spot for them, and that's how we've built this team. And now look at us. You know, it took years for them to get to this point. So with a guy like Kako, it almost feels like, I know you kind of made the point, like, when do we look at this and say it's time to move on? But can you just make the point that it's okay? And, like, these things don't always have to pan out?
Absolutely. I think that's part of the problem a lot with GMs. They're like, hey, shit, we drafted this guy, whatever position is, right? It's top 5, top 10, first round, whatever it may be. If we get rid of him and he succeeds somewhere else, it looks bad on us. Well, it's like, not every pick, not every free agent signing is going to work out. It's impossible. Like, you can't be perfect. You can't bat 100%. It's not, it's players, they lose confidence. There's injuries. There may be stuff going on with their personal lives. There's so many external factors that go into it. It's impossible for that to happen. You look at, 2 years ago, Huberto, 100 plus points. And he goes to Calgary. When someone's used to their environment, whether it's living, the, you know, the staff, everything going on at the rink, but also away from the rink. And then you take that away and now you have to establish that somewhere else. It's not that easy. I don't think that gets talked about enough. So to your point, yeah, if he goes on somewhere else and succeeds, you should be happy for him, right? You look at it from a human being, you should be happy for him that he's now living up to his potential. Not every
great kid too.
Not every player. Exactly. Not every pick or player is going to turn out the way you want it to be. It's impossible. There's only so many top six spots or only so many bottom six spots. There's only so many power play positions. There's only so many goalies you can have on the team. There's only so much you can do. So that's what I was saying before. I almost hope he gets to go somewhere else and he lives up to his potential and he loves life and he's happy again and he enjoys the game of hockey that everyone should.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he like seems so unhappy right now, but like as a guy who goes 2 overall, like you gotta imagine he wants a better opportunity somewhere else, right? Like
you gotta think he wants to be on the power play, he wants to be playing top six, he wants to be getting ozone starts. Absolutely, absolutely. It's not to say, and I'm sure I don't know him well. If you know he's a great kid and he's still being a great teammate, good for him, because there's not many guys that would act that way in that situation. But at some point, something has to give.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into some fan questions. These are brought to you by Breakaway Payments. Rangers fans, if you own a business or work at a company that accepts credit cards as a form of payment, then listen up. Breakaway Payments has payment processing solutions for retail and e-commerce businesses, custom integrations, and more. So email fellow Rangers fan Brett@breakawaypayments.com or visit their website at www.breakawaypayments.com. That's www.breakawaypayments.com. Breakaway Payments will save your business a ton of money on those dreaded credit card processing fees. Let's go Rangers. So let's get into some fan questions. Let me just pull them up here. It takes a second always. Let's start out with, we posted so much on the Instagram story. Let me get to it. All right. First one. All right. Let's start with Natty Maddie 98. How many MDW wieners are the boys having today? I'm personally logging about 5 LGR. You guys got any big Memorial Day weekend plans or what? Start with a fun one. Why not?
I'm going for a workout as soon as we finish this.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my boxing instructor is a New Yorker, so we always chat Rangers when I go there. So it'll be cool. Should be some good energy today. Probably chilling by the pool later today and have a boat day tomorrow.
Not bad.
Love it. That's the Miami life. I'm going to my buddy's Memorial Day party today and then flying back for game 3.
All right, sweet boys. All right, let's go. This is for DZ. This is from Shiv. What was Torch like behind the scenes? He comes off as a super passionate guy, and I know this is a guy you love talking about, so get into it.
Incredible. He's a genuine human being, really cares about his players. I'd say, and we've talked about this many times, probably the most misunderstood guy in hockey. And he is very hard on his players, but he treats everyone the same, which as you get older and you mature, you know, not only as a player, but as a human being, you appreciate that, right? It doesn't matter if you're making league minimum or $10 million a year, you score 40 goals or 0 goals. He treats everyone the same way. He preaches work ethic, everyone, you know, pulling on the same rope. And, you know, I wish I got to play it for him my whole career.
Yeah. I think I told you the story. I had one or two interactions now with Torts, and like, you know, I told you before I was shit my pants. I texted DZ, like, give me something to ask him that'll make him like not want to kill me. But he was super kind in the scrums too. Like, he was so funny. He, I don't know if I told you this, DZ, but after the Rangers played the Flyers and they won, the Flyers won, I think, like late in the year. The guys in the room are taking like 20 minutes to do their media. Like, you know how it is. Like, you walk, like, media walks in the room, like, guys are supposed to be available, and then you kind of hit the bus. The Flyers are a younger team. They're all eating their pizza, like, showering up, like, taking their sweet ass time. And Torts walks out and goes, all right, they're not going to come out. Fuck them. Let's just start this thing. Like, it was so funny. But next one.
Speaks his mind.
Yeah, he's great. Mike_D92. If VZ is out, does Kako, Brod, Zinski, or Wheeler play? Avery, we'll start with you.
That's a good one. I was thinking about it last night, right? Like, Wheeler's been in warmups. He's been, you know, teetering
just
around.
Just one time. Cody said that last night. He took warmup for the first fucking time last night.
I know, that was funny. But no, he's teetering around, right? He's ready to play. He can play. He's been in practice, this and that. He was in warmups the other night. But I think Kako goes back in. I think that you scratch him to give him that boost of confidence to go into game three and go into the next building ready to play. So I think that Kako gets slotted back in.
GZ,
I feel like you have to, right? As a left winger, yeah, he's the guy that's going to slot in. I don't know. I'm assuming Wheeler can play his offside. He can play, you know, really all positions. But I think, yeah, you have to go back with Kako. It's him or Wheeler. You know, do you want the experience to have Wheeler in? And as we talked about before, God forbid something else happens, or if they don't get off to a good start and you want to switch the lines up a little bit and move things around, I think Wheeler definitely slots in and allows you a little bit more versatility.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, DZ, I'm going to give you a chance to protect your boy here, because the next one is from Jamiola94, and it's not even a question, it's a statement. Roslovic has to come out. What are your thoughts?
He didn't look good. He
struggled last night for sure.
Yeah. He hasn't played his best, but you know, he's slotted into that top line. I think he's done a good job. It's allowed them to balance their lines out. Mm-hmm. But as we talked about before, playoffs, you know, conference finals, especially as you continue to progress, the games get harder. The games get magnified that much more. So he hasn't played his best. I'm assuming he knows it. I'd imagine the coaches have told him that as well. So we'll have to see next game. Hopefully he brings a different game than what he showed the last few, but it's also now with him going from the first line to fourth line, him being more of an offensive guy, you're slotted in different situations. You're maybe not given as much opportunity with the puck, but he's got to find a way to be better and make a positive impact on the game.
What is he like personality wise as a player? You know what I mean? Like there are some guys who, you know, maybe the demotion gets to them, you know, sometimes it fires them up. Like, you know him better than anyone we're going to talk to. So like, he seems like a pretty even keeled kind of guy when you talk to him from the media perspective, but you know, have you played with him? What's your relationship with him?
I played with him in Columbus. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty even keeled. He's a fun guy to be around. Like, I consider him like my younger brother. When I play with him, we're just always chirping each other. Like very fun to be around. Very easygoing, but at the rink, definitely even keeled. And it's also different. You're coming from, you know, Columbus, where you're from. He lives there, has friends outside the rink, and then you're going into New York. You get traded there at the deadline. You don't really have like your built-in infrastructure or community outside of the rink. So a little bit tougher to get accustomed to or feel comfortable. When I was there for round one, I believe I did get together with them. We met up and had lunch. So we talked about, you know, stuff like that, and a completely different market than Columbus, even though you are from there and you're probably
Winnipeg too.
And friends at the game. You know? Yeah. Exactly. And he had, in his early years in Winnipeg, they had playoff runs. So he is used to that type of pressure, but it's a completely different animal in New York. So there probably is a bit of there's going to be some growing pains. But again, he's old enough. He knows he needs to be better. And it's a matter of him putting in the work and now and doing that.
It's funny, actually, now that you said that too, another guy that was talked about, you know, in what I referenced before with Rahegi and Kako and, I think I actually said Roslovic, but Paul Maurice was asked before game one about Roslovic, and he was one of those guys that Maurice coached in Winnipeg and said, like, you know, when we drafted him, you know, we drafted him pretty high, thought he'd be a top six guy, but we had Scheifele, Wheeler, Connor, you know, whoever else at the time. I can't really think of Winnipeg's lineup, but like, he was just one of those guys who didn't fit, right? Like, he was good enough, but just didn't fit. Now it's like, I, you know, from my own perspective, it's like, if I'm him, I'm like, fuck, I should, you know, this should be my spot, you know? So, it's gotta be tough a little bit mentally, right? Just like knowing that you should be on the top line and then shit just kind of changes, but I don't know.
And so like, you're dropping from top line to second, it's like, you're all the way down the lineup, and that's what, 5 to 7 minutes less on the ice, you know? And if he gets a little bit of power play minutes, but you know, typically the PP1 logs most of the two, because when they're slinging it around, you know, they're tough to get the puck off of. So that changes things. Now you're not getting your puck touches. You're feeling a little bit off in the game. You have to find other ways to make an impact.
Mm-hmm. Avery, we'll start with you on this one. Pat Bone 4, less of a question, more of a shout out to Trouba and Miller. Great game by the pair. What did you think?
Yeah, they've been getting a lot recently, you know, even all season, the fans wanted to switch them up. I even said that they probably should switch up at some point. They get switched up and then they get put back together. But I just think Trouba's built for this series, man. He's a big body. He bangs bodies, and he's just a strong guy in the corners, which you need, especially with guys like Barkov forechecking. The Panthers are so strong on their forecheck, and they hit really hard. So you need a guy like Trouba who can absorb a hit and then move the puck, right? And I think that him and Miller did a great job, because in game one, they were doing a little bit too much. They weren't simplifying their game. Miller would make a great play, and then he would try to peel back and do something else, right? Get the puck in deep, hammer bodies, and then take care of business on the defensive end. And I think that's what they were doing last night. And listen, if they play like that, they'll have a lot of success going forward.
TZ?
Yeah, I think you made a good point. Quick up the pucks. Just like north, go north as quick as possible, especially a team like Florida that hounds you on the forecheck. Moving the puck as quick as possible, being predictable for the fours, chip and chase, get in and create that momentum of establishing your own forecheck. Where I'm excited to see, and this is where, you know, having two veteran coaches, you see the chess match a little bit. Now going into Florida, what type of matchups is Paul Maurice going to be looking for, right? Yeah. Now that they get last change. So this is like kind of the game within the game. When you have two coaches that have been around as long as they have, I'm almost more excited to watch that than seeing the actual players on the ice. So it's going to be actually very interesting to see.
Were you more impressed from Trouba Miller in game two than game one?
Definitely better. I still think I agree with you on the physical aspect with Trouba, but come playoff time and as you're playing better teams, yeah, the big hits are important to establish, I guess, your dominance and let people know, hey, I'm here. Running out of position for some of the hits, as we saw, especially last series, is, you know, created some great A chances again. So it's knowing those opportunities and knowing who you're playing against. So it's, you know, it's a fine line to walk.
Well, on the flip side too, last night, Ekblad, you know, he takes a run at, it might've been Panarin maybe on the first goal. He's caught out of position, and that's why Trocheck's wide open back door, you know? So like, it's going to happen on both sides, right? Guys want to establish their dominance. Like you both talked about, like, so, you know, we don't notice, you know, we got the Ranger hat on. We don't notice what the other team does, but Ekblad, you know, DZ, like you talk about it. It's a common hockey term, stay inside the dots. And, yep, you know, guys that get outside the dots, that's what allows those mini two-on-ones in the middle of the ice to happen. And a guy like Trouba, who sometimes takes himself outside the dots and gets caught, that's when you get hurt. So, you know, I don't know if you want to make that point as well.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think that's why they make a good pair, him and Miller, because Miller, with his skating ability and his reach and length, if Trouba is to get overextended, Miller is typically there to clean up for that, right? And I do think they make a really good pair. So I believe they should stay together. I think it's a great shutdown pair. They complement each other really well. So they're going to be very, very key for this series.
Mm-hmm. All right, next one. This is for DZ specifically. Newton IV. What's the worst nickname you've heard about yourself? I heard someone at the Garden call you Del Zero.
Probably that one, I guess.
I don't know if you want to answer this one.
You can't hurt my feelings. I got thick skin. I got abused by torts at a young age. I got thick skin.
The Delzaster. That was a big
I've heard that one. Yeah, I know. It's weird. I go back to the Garden now and I get like a lot of love. But there was like a time where I was like hated by a bunch of fans. I was like, fuck, like I had some pretty good years there. You know, like my I had like one off year the last year when AV came in. But if you look at my numbers, and especially for a team that didn't produce much and how far we went, like I had some pretty good years. So some people that hate on me, I'm like, there's just, I think the issue was there my first year. I came in very, very hot, and they're like, oh, this guy's going to be the next Brian Leetch. I'm like, fuck, like, that's some big shoes to fill, you know? Like it was expected that. Someone actually said to me last game I was there, oh, I was expecting you to be Leetch and Gilroy to be Zubov. I was like, these are two like legendary players. Yeah. Like, give us a chance. So I think that was definitely part of it. It was the expectations were so high, and obviously I didn't live up to those. I'm not sure anyone could or would.
Give yourself some credit.
I said I had a good career. Would I've loved to be in Brian Leach? Yeah, I think anyone would, but unfortunately, I wasn't. So I gotta eat it sometimes if people are gonna give me a hard time, and it comes with the territory. So it's all good. I can handle it.
DZ, you know, New Yorkers are psychopaths. You know that. Like you're talking about people who said that we should trade Panarin at one point. This is
Igor, dude. They were talking about trading Igor.
Exactly.
This year.
Yeah, you put a Ranger fan in a psych ward, they're keeping him there. They're not letting him out. So.
Yeah,
I would. Yeah, you can't take anything to heart in this city. Yeah, absolutely,
it is. It's all good. I appreciate the passion. It's all good.
I have a question for you, actually. And I don't know if I've asked you this before, but I was kind of in a similar position in college. So you can't really compare to the NHL, obviously. But when you're traded, because you were traded to Nashville, right, in 2014,
right. Yeah.
That year. When you're traded that year and you watch the team that you are traded from go to the Stanley Cup final, I know you're probably rooting for a lot of the guys, but is there that small party that's like, fuck, I hope they don't win?
No, there's a large part of you that's hoping.
Yeah.
I'd say maybe the whole part of me was like, they better not fucking win. They better not fucking win. Yeah, it's brutal because you're buddies with guys on the team, but like, hey, if I get traded and like then everyone's like, oh, he was, you know, he was what was wrong with the room and the missing piece was the guy we traded him for, right? And it's not the case. It's just that's how people see things. So yeah, that year they went on the run and I watched all of it and it was nerve
wracking. You would have qualified for a ring though, wouldn't you?
I don't think so. No, I don't know. I don't know what the, cause even my time in St. Louis, I technically didn't qualify, but I didn't play any playoff games, but because, I don't know if we've talked about this before, because I was first at the rink every single day. I worked my absolute ass off because I wanted to show the guys, hey, if this guy needs a slot in the lineup, I know he's going to do the job. I know he's ready. I know he's prepared. He's not just fucking off and just, you know, working on skills on the ice. This guy's putting the work in the weight room, putting the work on the ice. So it was on the ice at least 30 minutes to 45 minutes before practice every day, working on my own, first guy in the gym. And they essentially gave me a ring. And although I didn't qualify, they did that because of the work I put in off the ice. And that to me was, you know, a very special moment for me because it, you know, speaks to my character and who I was as a teammate. And that's, you know, what I take most pride in.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a topic that's not talked about a lot. Like I just know from my own experience, like the year after I left UMass, they went to the national championship and I was like, holy fuck, like they better not fucking win. I would have been a junior. I would have been on the team. I was like, oh my God, this would like, I'd never live it down. You know, it's just,
yeah. I mean, I played for enough teams that it's like, fuck, there's too many teams I got to cheer against now. You know? Like at some point, one of them's going to win. I'm gonna have to eat that one on the chin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say
our buddy Witt talks about it all the time. He gets traded for Chris Kunitz and he said,
but that was, did he get traded in 2009 when they won?
Yeah.
He said,
it's the worst moment of his life.
Yeah. That sucks. All right, next one. It's actually another one from Shiv. He asked some really good questions. And Avery, we'll start with you, and then DZ, you can talk more specifically. But why are some players 82 game players versus 16 game players? Example: Goody is meh in 82, but fire in the playoffs. And you know we've talked about that a lot on here. It's a Draymond Green quote. DZ, if you're not familiar, it's like Draymond Green once said, you know, there are 82 game players, there are 16 game players, the guys who get you into the playoffs and the guys who get you through the playoffs. And that's kind of what this question is geared around. So, Ave, what do you think about Gaudreau?
Well, I always say it's such a long season. You go through the ups and the downs and you can't really base a team based off of what happens in the regular season. You obviously have the numbers to back up certain things, but it's just about getting into the playoffs. You look at the magic that the LA Kings had in the early, you know, the mid 2000s, right? Against us, against the Devils, they were an 8 seed. They just snuck their way in, and then they made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals and won, right? Because they had those 16 game players. It's just about getting into the playoffs, and then you just let the magic take over. These guys who are bigger bodies, who are stronger, they last longer in the 16 games. And it's all about who has the more clutch gene, right? It's not about, you might not be the best player, but it's just about guys who know where to be at the right time. And Barclay Goodrow knew exactly where to be. His experience paid off, and he put the puck in the net. And arguably the biggest moment of the Ranger season probably is.
Mm-hmm. Can I rephrase it for you, DZ?
Yeah, that's a phenomenal answer. I was gonna say the only thing I would add to that is just saying like he's been there before, right? The experience. Yeah. He's been there before, he understands the big moments, he doesn't get nervous or tense during those. He lives up to the moment.
I was gonna rephrase it for you specifically also and ask like if there was one guy on the Ranger teams you played on who could be an example of that.
When we traded for Brad, or not traded, sorry, excuse me, we signed Brad Richards, having him in playoffs, you know, there's that big goal against Washington that series. Yeah.
Great point shot, though.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was good vision, whoever that was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It may not have been always, the clutch goal or clutch play, but having him in the locker room, like, hey, this guy's been there before. He knows what to say, when to say it. And just even feeling him and knowing and seeing him there kind of gave you like a little bit of relief. So it's not always the play on the ice, but just having them in the locker room, it's amazing how far that goes.
I love how you make that. I was gonna say, I love how you make that point, because that's kind of what gets lost in translation with a lot of these chart guys and analytic guys, is that the locker room, there's so many things that happen that we don't see as fans that are so important and so crucial to a playoff run and to a team, right? Like you know it best. You were in the locker room. There's guys who might not be on the stat sheet at all in the playoffs, but they're so crucial to going forward for each team, right? Like Barclay Goodrow, there's a reason why he wears an A on his chest, right? He puts in the work, and the guys in the locker room love him. And we don't see it, but we just know that he's doing things that are making this team who they are.
For me, like Callahan was our captain and wasn't the most vocal guy, but you looked at him in the locker room, like, you know, this guy is going to give you absolutely everything he has every single game. He's going to block every shot. He's going to finish every check. He's going to do all the little things. And we had numerous guys that were like that. You know, Brandon Dubinsky was the same way on the back end, like Dan Girardi, like these guys would do absolutely anything for the other guys in the locker room. And that stuff, it doesn't get talked about enough. The feeling you have in the locker room, looking around saying, I know every single one of these guys is going to do whatever it takes, goes such a long way.
Take us through the locker room. This is a good tee up. Take us through the locker room after that game five, where Mark Stahl scores the overtime winner. Like, you know, I'm comfortable enough asking you, I don't know if you're comfortable enough talking about it, but like, what are the showers like? What's the post game conversation like? What do you do after that game? Is everyone just going home, or like, you know,
you asking about girth size? What are you asking about? Right
I'm not asking about who's packing heat.
Holy cow!
But I think a rowdy post game.
Yeah,
it's not the playoffs.
There was a fun group. A lot of guys, kind of like their mid to late 20s. It was great. The energy, you were excited, but you also knew the task at hand, that was just one game. So we were a very focused group, excited about that win. But it's like, as soon as we were done, you're going in the shower, shooting the shit, but you're ready on to the next game. Okay. What's next? Like, we're not living in the past. Like, we're moving next. Hey, we got to get the next one. We got the next one. It was just a very one track mind. So excitement, but it wasn't
slipping slides in the shower.
No. I mean, the best shower moments there were when anytime we lose in a shootout, Hank would be breaking the soap dispensers. It was a guarantee. You lost in a shootout, soap dispensers, done. Yeah. That was an automatic.
That's hilarious. I've heard a lot of people say that, like, you just don't talk to him or don't even look at him after a game.
No. He loses the soap dispensers, and the garbage cans would be trashed.
It's so funny because, like, he has such a calming presence about him now. But, like, you wouldn't – I mean, I guess you can't tell.
I had dinner with him, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. He was in Miami for F1, and myself, him, and his wife. And I said to him, like, Hank, like, you are such a better guy now that you're retired. I'm like, you're so much more – I told him, like, you're so much more fun to be around. He's like, what do you mean? Like, I was fun. I'm like, no, you weren't. Like, you were intimidating. Like, I didn't even want to talk to you. And his wife even, like, backed up. Like, yeah, you're so much more relaxed now. And he is. Like, he was so intense all the time. He couldn't turn it off. And that was just who he was. Like, he didn't even know he was doing it. He was just wired that way. And now he's just, to your point, much more calm, enjoyable to be around, can shoot the shit, laugh with them. He was typically the best in any sport. They're fierce competitors, and a lot of them are kind of wired that way, where you can't really have a conversation with them, which is shitty to say, but that's how it was.
Yeah. We actually had Sean Avery on our last episode, and this is, you know, I'll ask you another question. This is one of my own, and Avery, we can mix in our own questions here still. you know, DZ's a friend of ours, but and we'll go for like 15 more, 20 more minutes. Is that cool, DZ?
Yeah. I gotta be gone in like 10, yeah, 10, 15.
All right. 10, 15, we'll get you off. But Avery told us that when they were, you know, in their playoff run, I think like 06, 07 year before you were there, you know, he had gone to lunch with Shanny and Avery was shitting bricks, just so nervous about being in the playoffs. Shanny's doing like a crossword puzzle, I think was the story he was telling. But, you know, you're in the conference final against the Devils, right? 2012. And what are you doing, you know, day to day, like to not think about hockey? Cause you were still relatively young in that time. So like, you know, I know these situations are for the players. It feels like it might be life or death. Right. But like,
yeah,
you're still a human being in New York City, you know, in the conference final. Like, what are you doing day to day?
So that one was actually a pretty emotional time for me because my grandma passed away during that series. And oh, wow. This particular grandma lived with me growing up. So it was like a second mother to me, yeah. Very close. And she passed away. I forget what game it was. So actually during one of the days between games, I flew back for the funeral day in, day out. So that was a tough time for me. Yeah.
Is that public knowledge?
No, I don't really talk about it. I try to keep some stuff private, yeah. You know, with our life, everything's public. So, and I'm not one to make excuse saying, oh, that's why I didn't play at my best or whatnot. You know, it was a tough time for me and a very emotional time. So that series specifically was, had a lot on my mind and a lot of, I'm not going to call it distractions, a lot of external factors that were occupying space, between the ears that I had to try and turn off come playoff time or come game time, because it's a conference final. I don't know if I would ever get that opportunity ever again. And I'll be honest with you. And you know, we could talk about it now. It was hard. And I still to this day, I'm not sure I got proper closure from that. You know, this was, my grandmother lived with me since I was 4 years old, and I flew in on the morning, had the funeral, flew back later that afternoon to get back because I had the game the next day. So it was a brutal time. And not to say every series is like that, but to get back to your point and lighten it up a little bit, we don't really practice in playoffs. It's just like, hey, game, you're playing every other day, right? You're trying to get rest and recovery. At that time, you know, the weather's nice. So it's just trying to get out and be like a normal human being and not just let the game occupy you. So like going out for lunch, walking around the city, maybe grabbing a little bit of sun, but just trying to find things that'll lighten the mood a little bit, or at least get your mind off the game. And that way come game time, you are, you know, fully prepared and not feeling like you're exhausted already before the game's even played.
Yeah. Rempe, I don't know if you caught it. I asked him yesterday, like what he's doing, 21 years old in New York City. And he talked about like going to an escape room and shit like that. Like it's fucking hilarious.
What's it like being a 21 year old in New York City right now in an Eastern Conference final? I mean, away from hockey.
Last one for Reps, guys.
It's pretty cool. It's fun. It's,
are you still going out to dinners and stuff? Or is it just team?
Like at home, we're going to go for dinners and stuff like that. Went to an escape room the other day. But vampire room. I was not off to a hot start, but Eddie was buzzing. And then last half, I had some elite code breakers. I solved the puzzle. The guy was so impressed. He took us out for wings after. So it was a good job. I blew it away. It was some zodiac sign puzzle. I didn't even know anything about zodiac signs, but I cracked it. Not a big deal. So that was good. So he took us out for wings. So that was fun. Yeah, it was good. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
But no, like to your point, like, you know, I don't want to ask you too much about it, but like when you walk into the locker room on game day after coming from a funeral, like, you know, what is going through your head, your teammates? They probably don't know how to treat you really either. So it's kind of like a, you know, it's one of those weird things, right? Like when your friend goes through something, it's like, how do I act toward them? And it's human shit, you know?
Yeah. It's not, hopefully not something you ever want to really go through, but it's, yeah, you want to be there for them as a person, as your teammate, but at the same time, you're in this situation where you're in the conference final. And again, you never know when you're going to get that opportunity again. So it's a weird situation to be in. And I'm not sure there's a right or wrong thing to do or say. It's just like, hey, it's a reality and that's life. Shit happens and you kind of have to deal with it.
Yeah. All right, Abe, we'll go to you for this one. And we appreciate you sharing that, DZ. That's very, very,
Johnny, before you do it, I want to talk about Melon.
Yeah. Get in there.
They are the greatest hats in the world. DZ, I don't know if you've ever worn Melon, but they are unbelievable.
Good pickleball hat.
Such a good, the structure of the hat is what gets it for me. They have an antimicrobial properties so sweat doesn't break down the hat. There's no sweat stains. There's no smell. They're built to last 5 times longer than any other hat. That's the biggest part for me is the structure. I hate when my hats get bent or they get broken. It's the absolute worst, but Melon doesn't do that. They're comfortable. They have the most comfortable fit. I love the way they feel on my forehead. They don't scratch it. It's amazing. And they have the best offer in the game right now. They don't really do this often, but they do it for us. If you go to melon.com/bluecrew and use the code bluecrew, you'll get 30% off of your purchase. They don't do it often, but go now. Code expires June 1st. Get your Melon hat today. Greatest hat in the game.
Well, Dave. All right, we'll go right back to you. This is from Logan M17. DZ, we'll do two more. Is that cool?
Yep.
Okay. Do we think this series will be a battle of the goalies more than anything else? I mean, I thought I don't know if it was really. Hey, here you go. Sorry.
You know, you're fine.
I got too horny.
I just think that both teams have been so good defensively, right? We talk about the second chance opportunities with both goalies. They're good enough where if you don't allow these second chance opportunities and you keep the game to the perimeter, they're not really going to let up much and they're not going to see any high danger scoring chances. But I do feel like there could be a battle of the goalie game, right? Like there could be a game that just goes nothing into overtime again and we see another overtime game. But They're both phenomenal at what they do. They're probably the two best right now in the playoffs. And Igor made some pretty big saves last night. Mm-hmm. I still think Bob is incredible in his own aspect. And you look at what happened. You look at the goals last night. There's no way Bob stopped in the first one. And the second one, he maybe could have had, but it was such a good shot. Like, I don't know. I think that we might see battle of the goalies, but right now, it's just it's a testament to how good the defense has been for both teams.
Agreed. I don't think it's a goalie battle because they're expected to be good every night. They're that yeah. good. They're consistent. So it's like you're not expecting any other performance from them anymore. I think it's going to come down to is like, hey, is maybe a special team's going to get hot, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think the power is one of the power plays going to get. Is one player going to get hot? Both teams are defensively sound and both have very good goaltending. We're not going to see a 5-4 game this series. It's just not going to happen. If it does, I'll eat my words, but I don't expect it to happen at all. Someone's going to have, you know, a very off night, but the consistency level of structure of these teams and then the how good these goalies are and how consistent they are, it's I don't know if it's going to come down to that because it's just expected. Every night you're like, oh, he played well again. It's almost boring talking about it that you're expecting them to play well every single night, right?
I was sitting there last night thinking we were going to at least 3 overtimes. I didn't think either one was going to let one up. It didn't seem like, you know, I said it before, but it didn't seem like either team had like a flurry of chances, you know, like Hedl gets that one that goes off Ekman Larson's ass. But like, you know, that was really the best chance the Rangers had prior to Goodrow in overtime. Right. And we were like 6 minutes away from going to double overtime. But yeah, I don't know. Weird kind of low so far in the first two games, I feel like, as far as the goalies. You know, I don't think either one stood on their head, but like they haven't been tested as much as they yeah. could have been, right? All right, I lied. We're doing two more because they're both catered to UDZ and we don't have you on here every show, so we're going to take advantage of it. If you had to have one player from the 2014 team on this team, who would you want?
Ooh.
Avery and I have answered this question a million times, so let's ask a player.
Oh, damn. And you guys have the same answer?
No, I think we've changed it up. Like I think I've said Brian Boyle in the past just to, you know, have some more depth. Abe, I don't know who have you
Well,
said?
The original question was like who would slot would you if who would you they take need? One and slot him in
Yeah,
the
yeah, who would slot? Yeah, not maybe the best player. Yeah, fair. Yeah, I mean, Boyle's definitely good in a big body, good on the but their PK is good. It's not like they're like struggling in that aspect.
Yeah, Boyle's a 20 goal scorer too.
yeah, he is. He does everything well. Yeah. You know, absurd amount of playoff games. You know, he's a hot commodity. This is a great question. I'm not to say I'm stumped. I mean, give me a second to think about it.
Kevin Klein.
That's fucking brutal. That's fucking brutal. I would definitely want another D. I think a D man of some sort. I think I would take a I would think I would take Dan Girardi.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Be perfect for this series. Does all the little things. He can outlet the puck. He's, it was a very underrated first pass. Very good first pass. Blocked shots. Was physical. Kind of did everything. Yeah, I think he'd be perfect for this series.
I'm laughing at myself. Kevin Klein.
That was insane. That was insane.
Fucking prick. Asshole. Yeah, first he asked me to do an extra question and then shits on. Yeah. That's fucking brutal.
I didn't do it on purpose. So you just came to
my think the original question someone asked us was about like who would slot into the bottom six. But if I could pick anyone from 2014, I'd want Marty St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. He'd be a good fit right now on that first line. All right. DZ, last one. You've probably been asked this a million times, but your favorite memory as a Ranger? We'll end on this high note here.
Wow. The game seven winner. Yeah. Against Washington.
Be, right?
Yeah. It's the, yeah. Yeah. Remember the play like it was yesterday on my offside. Ovechkin comes down the boards, hit him, puck gets loose. I head man it. He's lazy getting up. And I forget who the other forward was back checking, was kind of coasting. Gabby jumps off the bench, comes in, takes a shot, gets blocked. I follow the play up. Gets on my stick. I go high blocker, and then you know, I'm celebrating, and by the Zamboni door there, my hands in the air, like looking around and in awe. Mm. The garden goes fucking bananas. I'm getting goosebumps. Really, I wish I could live that moment again. Like that would be, I could die happy then. You know, that was so fucking cool. Only regret is not winning a cup there. I could only imagine how that city would be.
You'll be here this year if they do it, right? You'll come in for the
play. I will definitely come back for that. I mean, it's not the same when you're not the one playing in it, winning it. But yes, I will definitely be there if that's the case. And I'm hoping that's the case.
How often are you sitting at home and just type it on YouTube, Michael Delzato, game seven goal? Don't lie.
Not enough. Not as much as you think. No. I did watch it the other day. Someone asked me about it. Like, hey, I heard about this goal. Do you mind showing it to me? I'm like, oh, yeah, let me just pull up my favorites. Yeah, no problem.
It is funny. You could tell that Goodrow blacked out last night.
Yeah.
Like, he scored the goal. Like, with all the guys grabbing him, he's like, his head is like bobbing in like five different directions because you just know that he is on cloud 15. Like, he just doesn't even know where he is.
I just hate when players like, lie and say they don't watch their own highlight. Like, when you score a big moment like that, you're watching it fucking 100 times. You know?
Yeah. I've watched it many times. Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
DZ. Well, we appreciate you. Thank you for taking the time this morning. Maybe we'll see you this weekend. I know Lewis invited you out in the boat Monday. Maybe we'll get you out there and
boat get bashed, baby.
But Avery, any final thoughts before we kind of wrap up the show today?
What's this boat shit? You didn't invite me.
My buddy Lewis.
Not my boat.
My buddy Lewis invited, you know, me and a couple of friends in the boat, and he loves DZ, so he you can come if you want.
Yeah, no, that's a pity bullshit.
That's a pity. I know.
It's a pity invite.
Let's go. Good podcast.
All right.
Thank you, fellas. Appreciate it.